That's great joy.
Aren't they suing him?
I think they probably ought to, but they, well, they've only just started realizing that treating this as a legal issue is probably the right way to look at it. Mm-hmm. So they're not really the sort of people that are up for understanding the intricacies of the committee, I guess. I mean, you would have thought they could, but it's actually quite hard work. The law isn't very clear. That's a good question. They might be able to. It's just it's so strapped now. You know, the Citizens Advice Bureau is so hard to actually get access to because they have so many cases and so few people. So, but yeah, that's probably the next thing they'll have to do.
All right. Everything's going. I can see here.
Are we supposed to count to 10 or something?
No,
they don't have to do
it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right. Well, I thought the right thing to do was to review what Weiqing's been doing in the area of dialogue structure for Work Package 1 over the last period. So basically for him to talk about what progress he's been making. And then for us to, for him to describe what work he intends over the next period of the project. And for us to figure out what help he needs with that. Mm-hmm. Maybe give him some help figuring out what publications he's going to get out of this, and for us to make sure that it fits into the overall project. So this is something that, you know, we're not going to do everything today, but I wanted to make sure that we sort of all aligned on what he was doing at the moment, and then sort of figured out how to give him the best advice. That's why I called this.
Are you going to give a presentation for us?
So,
think what you're doing is segmenting meetings into highly interactive parts and not so interactive parts, where you think some of them are like a bit like dialogue and some are a bit like monologue. So what measurements would you apply to find out which is which?
Yeah, so this is going to be based on the utterance to utterance. So for this utterance, the next utterance, if it's from another speaker, then if it's not a back channel or something similar, then it's dialogue, so it's speak changes. So yeah, speak changes.
So you mean relatively short turns and speaker change.
But short turns like or something very similar might be the second type of interactivity, the weak interactivity. That might not be analyzed as a monologue, but as a dialogue. Not as style, but as a monologue. Yeah. So for that part, for that kind of back channels, we can just skip that. And do not treat them as interruptions or something. Yeah, we could just.
So am I right in thinking you think that you can segment meetings maybe into two types of areas, interactive and non-interactive? So what are the characteristics of the interactive areas?
Speed change.
Okay, so you just said, I think, that you would characterize short terms as being the non-interactive parts.
Listening, we
can discount back channels. I mean, is it okay if we talk about this for a minute? Because I'm confused. Or do you get?
I was just wondering if you were going to define this more in the slides to come, or if this is as much as you're going to tell us. I'm just wondering if he's.
Because if this is all we've got, I think we should have interactive and non-interactive on the board, and then figure out what properties go in each, just so we're clear what the two mean.
Sure. So what did you have more on later slides?
So for interactivity, this is on the slide. So the activity is, I define interactivity to be the degrees of interaction in meetings.
Well, okay.
Which might, speak change would be a very good indicator.
But you need to be more precise what you mean by speaker change. So
do you
mean all of the speakers are involved in it?
No.
Is it sufficient for two speakers? Right.
Yeah.
And
no,
then
yeah. So actually, so this is a very rough idea of interactivity. If we go further, we might distinguish the interactivity between two, three, or all the groups. So that might be some finer definition for interactivity.
But we've also established that it's not just speaker change, because if you have,
So that might be the second class. Yeah.
Okay, but that's, you can, that's definitional, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily consider that to change the terms, those are just back channels. So one speaker will have the floor channel throughout that. And so I guess what you're saying is that the interactive sections would have shorter speaker turns when you're not considering the back channels as interruptions. So.
Well, it might be the case that to be interactive, there have to be dialogue as some specific type.
Yeah. Actually, because I've learned.
Well,
like statement, reject, accept, you know, something
sufficient but not necessary. It depends. If you had a bunch of people all just giving information and opinion around the table, and they never actually asked questions of each other, but the turns were actually quite short.
Yeah,
which
so this might be a weak definition of interactivity. So if we could figure out if they are really interacting with each other, or just incremental presentations of information, so that's different. We might need a more strict or finer definition of interactivity. For the use of this term for the indicator of the
basic acts and propositional content that's there. And what you get is a messier version of the argument structure because not everybody has the same argument in their brain, you know, for this, but the same theory or the same analysis can be applied to both parts. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. And if you do need to argue that these two kinds of group activities can only be analyzed if you use different analytical mechanisms, then you have to explain why that is. Right? So it puts an extra burden of proof on the work that you do.
Well, actually, I don't quite agree. I mean, for example, you can't use RST across speakers because the definitions of the relations depend on the intentions of the speaker, and there's different speakers have different intentions. So you can't use the theory. It's just fundamentally wrong. It's meant as a theory for one person. So that doesn't
right.
mean there aren't others yet. So
but to the degree that a group is building an argument together, I mean, I think what you're doing in group discussion isn't necessarily one coherent argument for the person, but an argument that is the group view.
Yeah.
And so it's maybe it's not RST, but it's more akin to, I don't know, is it Toulmin, but, you know, not that. But, you know, the kinds of things where people try to represent
right,
argument structure.
Those are really different theories that are trying to get at different things. And they admit, you know, some of them admit of multiple parties and some of them say you're in one speaker's head, right?
Are the important aspects of it for this analysis really that substantively different, though?
Yeah, the entire theory is based on intention and the intention of one individual. So RST would be a bad theory to use.
But if there's been an argument so far in a group meeting and somebody makes a statement, they have an intention about how to modify that group
argument.
So
modeling a single contribution by a single speaker, within that you can use RST if you want, right? But across speakers you can't.
Right, but
you have no relations for things like reject or agree. The theory doesn't have them.
Okay, so the relation names aren't right, but
So it's not the right theory, because the theory is the relations plus the notion of nuclearity. So we need a different theory. Now, I think Alex SDRS allows both kinds. So, you know, within a speaker term, you can have things like information and cause and all that.
Okay.
But then across speaker terms, you can have things like correction. Or I didn't see any examples of agree or disagree in SDRS.
No, I don't think so.
Well, the relation names are less important. I mean, if people have argued very much about exactly what relations are in any of these theories,
well,
and that's less important than what the theory is trying to achieve. And it just seems to me that if you've got to have two separate apparatuses for the speaker internal argument structure and the group argument structure, that's more apparatus than you should actually need from doing this kind of analysis. Because in both cases, you're building up an argument publicly in this group meeting, you know, adding something or changing the existing argument in some way by relating a contribution to what's already on the table. So.
Yes, but so, I mean, relation names, it's not the names that are important, it's their semantics that are important, right? And the semantics of the relations are based on the semantics of the utterances that they're related, as Alex explained yesterday. So
there you've got somebody who's doing theoretical development that would claim that you don't need two separate analytical frameworks for these two types of activities that Weiqing has
for
identified.
This specific set of relations that they have defined. There might be some higher level structure that you want to pull out of that. I mean, as you were saying, you're just you want to look at this, you know, very local stuff, but from that you want to cut or pull out something high.
We need to see how well we could work out certain options.
No, I think working from the bottom up sounds great, but I mean, you can imagine someone saying, well, how did they decide to make it blue? And maybe there was a long globe-like look, and you kind of want to abstract away from, he said this, she said that, he's, you know. Anyway, I don't think, especially, you know, if you're not steeped in these theories, that it makes a huge difference to you whether we use RST or something like SDRS, but it might make much more, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I just prefer it to be one thing rather than two completely separate things, and then the added explanation of why it's not possible to have the same thing applied to all paths.
Well, I think we should try to find a theory that allows multiple speakers and relations to span over more than one speaker, you know. Because it is true that, I mean, if you look at things like Damsel and other attempts to come up with annotation schemes for dialogue apps, there was this notion of forward-looking and backward-looking. Anyway, the relational, I mean, in some way, you know, they're all relational. But there's a different set of tags in there from the kinds of relations you see within RST, for example.
Mm.
So if you look at Amanda Stent's thesis and the analysis that she did, sort of within a turn, she used something like RST, and then across turn, she used Damsel. Right.
Yeah, which probably wouldn't give us the kind of information that we need about relations across turns, just because we really are critically interested in the argument that the group is building up, so that we can find the decisions that they made and any counter proposals to proposals that are being made and things. But it really is more in the spirit of the RST-ish relations than in the damsel kinds of relationships. What we want out of the relationships between speakers here. They are jointly building up an argument structure, and that is the critical thing that we're missing in order to be able to understand what's happening in these meetings. So we wouldn't want to do the same thing as what she did in this case, just because damsel doesn't give you the right sort of representation between speakers.
Well,
because
she means I accept and reject.
Oh, does it? Okay. Yeah. I haven't seen it on this kind of data, so maybe.
In fact, RST doesn't give you anything.
Right, okay, but what I mean is you want to make sure you get the argumentative relations however you do it, whichever relations you have to build.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that there's a particular set of tags or relations that have been defined out there that are the right ones. I'm just saying we need the correct ones for the structure that we're trying to get out of this. Because
right,
we need certain
okay.
information out of this analysis.
So I think it's much more, I think it would really make more sense to go about this problem figuring out what kinds of relationships and finding, and you know, like setting down what the constraints are on.
Well, Weiqing's been looking at the data, so that's a step.
Okay, good. And then there are lots of different theories of argument. I mean, you can also think about the sort of joint.
good at this kind of rationality, you know, and the difference between information and opinion isn't that prominent in the way people do their reasoning. So,
but that might be some difference in impression patterns. Because for information, if we somebody's seeking some information, then he asks some question, and the one knows will gives the answer. But so, for the opinion, thought stuff, and the speaker might just some idea, and others will comment or challenge the idea.
Well, you can't define them that way. You can't define the difference between information and opinion that way, because that's basically defining as the what happened about it. And I think what tends to happen is that if people challenge the facts, you often discover that they weren't actually solid facts anyway. You know, that they're, I think the boundary between these is kind of fluid. So I guess the question is it important to, what's it important to? So do you need the difference between information and opinion to do this analysis?
So far I'm still looking for a core principles for the interaction, for the interactions. So
what have you been looking at?
Yeah, I was just
so
it'd be useful to know what.
So
yeah.
you've got books that high on your desk. Which ones are they?
For the distance analysis, they're using exchange, but so they have no classification, just.
But who's they? That's the question. Who?
Sigmund and Gutenberg. That is Bergmann's, and also Geneva School, I don't think they list some kind of exchange. But so the exchange structure exchange is first developed in systemic functional form among the party to work in. So actually they have something in the textbook about exchange, but they call it negotiation. So they have some flowcharts of the detailed analysis exchange structure.
Okay. So I'm sort of getting that you think there's a lack in the theory to do with exchange structure at the moment, but I'm not quite clear yet what you think the lack is.
So, I don't think there is any kind of principle of classification of exchanges. This is.
Well, are you thinking? It's been a while since I've read this literature, but I mean, my understanding of exchanges is that the initiating move introduces a goal to the discourse, and then the remaining moves will contribute to either the meeting of that discourse goal or the decision not to bother with that discourse goal, right? And so I'd be surprised if there wasn't work describing things in those terms. I mean, I know Sinclair and Coulthard is basically about teaching. So you wouldn't expect that to necessarily apply in wider context in a way. Like, you might expect to have to extend the theory to do that. But I think there are other people that looked at exchange structure and described it in these terms in a way that should meet certain needs.
From my previous research, we see analysis of information seeking now on certain platforms. So it's about the tourism information. So from my analysis of that kind of dialogues, I could say that there are only four basic exchanges.
George Horton's work on saying what are the different parameters for these exchanges. What are the things that characterize the set of exchanges?
So, but there are also some variations which are complex exchanges. So that's just a list, not like the basic exchanges.
So is your complaint less about knowing what makes an exchange and more about knowing how you parameterize exchanges for this genre? So what's the range? Okay, so you're worried about what's the range of exchange types for this genre, and that's what you think is
about. Parameter or principle.
So have you tried, I know of one previous attempt to establish what exchanges are needed for some kinds of industry meetings, and our experience in that project was that you can't really identify exchange structures in these meetings because they don't really follow that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
That exchanges are clear in, they're clearer in when you've got fewer people, so there's fewer people trying to pull the discourse goals in different directions. And they're clearer when your goals are quite limited. So when you've just got information exchange and the other, or there's a clear task that the people are trying to do and they're focused on that task, as is normal in dialogue elicitation, like math task or like your information seeking dialogues, which wasn't dialogue elicitation, but it was very constrained in genre. So the answer to the question might be nobody knows what a catalog of exchanges is for real meetings,
mm-hmm.
because or for these decision making meetings, because you can't identify exchanges, right? So have you gone through the meetings and looked for initiations and responses without a prior catalog, just knowing that an initiation introduces a new discourse goal and a response meets or negates that goal in some way? So have you tried marking these exchanges?
Not marking, just on my reading of the IS-108 form. Just to read it apart.
Well, I think that I don't know how we get to hear more of your presentation, because I think there are lots of different candidates,
mm-hmm.
and you certainly can't go through and mark up every meeting. I mean, mark up meetings with every scheme we think of. So I think we have to get an overview of what the candidates are, and if there's like two or three that we think are good contenders, then we try to see what works better.
Right? But a reading of this, could tell you that there is no case where you're going to be looking for initiation and responses that's going to work. Yeah, because you can go through and see that actually the pattern of addressing different discourse goals is too dispersed to be able to do that kind of work. But obviously you want to have a front runner scheme in mind before
there are a lot more options. So let's see what else you've got.
Okay. So this is for the dialogue part. For Moloch. So this is
first step is find out in what, how much of the material does the collaborative problem solving cover? So how much of a genre clash is there here?
Because it really seems to me that, you know, if you look at, and some of the stuff on exchange is like ancient, and, you know, they didn't have the ability to market lots of data and count things, you know. So, I mean, all the conversational analysis stuff, I mean, those guys didn't know anything, you know. I mean, it, so they see a pattern and they think it's kind of cute, and then they scour the world for third term repairs, you know. They don't actually say how often do those happen. I mean, they were, I mean, I know Manny Shagoff really well, and they're not counters. They're purposely not counters. They define themselves as non-counters.
But there are people in the field that are moving that direction, like Martin. And also, what's important here is the theoretical clarity about what an initiation and a response is. So what is it that ties different acts together at a higher level?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like, you know, there's something that we want from that, and then there's something that we want from collaborative problem solving.
Mm.
And if you take the exchange stuff, it's not going to quite do everything you want. If you look at the collaborative problem solving stuff, maybe it won't do everything you want. So.
But I think more important than looking at whether parts of the meeting are highly interactive or not so interactive is looking at what sort of task the people are trying to do at the moment. So, you know, are they doing, are they, as in the kickoff meeting, just exchanging information to get started with the project, or are they actually addressing some specific design criteria at the moment to try to decide which shape the thing is? Because that's going to affect the kinds of relations that you get between the utterances. And so that is much more like the literature from McGrath about the different kinds of activities groups get into. So I think that's another thing that has to be pulled into this, because you do require different kinds of relations, or you expect different kinds of relations from some overarching set in those different kinds of activities.
So the main action is, I guess, there might be some high-level problem-solving decision-making concepts, not like in exchange, which I like to be the low-level actors-to-actors relations.
So what's the high-level version again?
Meeting action.
Right, okay. The meeting actions is just going to be a segmentation. It's not going to present any microstructure.
Okay,
so it's just going to say from here to here they're doing something. That's all that scheme is going to do.
Somebody's writing on the whiteboard. I mean, the meeting actions they presented at the review seem really low level meeting, like somebody stood up.
That's not, no, those, well, that's individual actions. And the meeting actions are meant to become more semantic and more theoretical than the kind EDL had traditionally used.
Okay.
So we need to still preserve some sense of the activity, but rather than saying that somebody's at the whiteboard, it'll be, you know, that somebody's explaining something that the others are.
I mean, I realize it's important to recognize that, you know, when it came up, went to the whiteboard, I realize it's important.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised that those were meeting actions.
It's a different scheme.
Yeah.
efficient. You should be thinking about the high-level goal in order to focus the work that you're doing, rather than thinking, well, you know, there's these theories, you know, how can we apply these theories to it? And then seeing what comes out of that that might be useful for the meeting browser. Actually trying to say, yeah, we have a goal of being able to do this for the meeting browser. What kinds of dialogue structure would we need to be able to do that? I mean, I don't know, maybe you'd want to disagree with that, but this more goal-directed might actually make it easier to bring these things to publication in the long run, right?
Well, I think we should approach it both ways. I mean, you know, I, you know, the meeting browser people have a lot of constraints, and so what they end up with saying is most critical for them right now might not be the most interesting thing in the longer term.
Right. It's not necessarily what they say, but it's something, at least identify something that we hope to get out of it, you know.
Right. I mean, people have said over and over again that they would like to understand how a decision has evolved,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that, well, I don't know if all of this low-level stuff would allow you to track that kind of thing, but it might at least be the building blocks of allowing you to track that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, so there's
so, I mean, I think it's clear that something at this level needs to be there. And to ask questions like they disagreed or were there any counter proposals or whatever, even those kind of questions, you need some kind of markup, I guess.
It just helps you know which theory you should be concentrating on. So, you know, that immediately discounts exchange structures that are mostly for information seeking alone, because the notion of exchange is too restricted there in favor of these more argumentative things. So, I mean, I do think you should keep in mind what the final goal is so that you can plug this into something at the end and show some benefit of having a model.
Well, that brings up something interesting, because I think probably what we should do is try to get, you know, some of these tasks sort of put on, you know, sort of as part of the official agenda, so being able to answer questions like, or to some specific, you know, recommendation and things like that. I mean, you know, those strike me as clear things that, you know, the decision-making meetings want to know if they've missed one or heard right.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. So it seems like we should probably get some of these things on the official agenda and say, look, you know, wouldn't it be nice if you could have answers to these questions?
Yeah. I mean, operationally, it's not going to make much difference whether it's hub or not, right? Because we've got the bank of people. Well, we have to get the hub stuff through, but you know, he's not ready with an annotation scheme that can be used at the moment anyway. So
no,
and
so
it's not that expensive. I mean, it's something that we can afford off the budget.
And I think we wouldn't want to necessarily do this on ICSI data. I think the ICSI data is too
yeah,
complex.
It, and it's too different a genre. Yeah.
Decisions made.
Mm.
And also
That was about what task the person doing the browsing was going to do. They didn't say anything about what sort of information they'd want from the meeting itself. It was about...
they just mentioned that they want decision issues, action items. I think they are more talking about user requirement for the meeting than subtext they want to know happening in a meeting.
You know, I mean, they really, they made it clear that they...
That was the browser task. You know, they've identified these seven different tasks people might want to do with browsers. You know, like join a meeting late and catch up on what's happened in the meeting so far. Be at home waiting for the washing repair guy.
Given that, it's really scary to think about
which are still an elicitation task, but they're not our domain. So that should help some.
Okay, well that's good.
And they've been declared help, so they'll accrue all of the normal annotations. Of course, yeah, you'll never get the TNR and DFPI stuff on it. They're only building stuff in one domain.
So, okay, so we want to decide what Weiqing should do next, and maybe think about meeting him.
Yeah, just figure out how we're going to help him to try to make this more efficient.
So before we do that, can I just ask you a question about chunking?
Mm.
In the beginning, you said something about you're doing this chunking, you're doing it on the ITSI data, but this was, did you say it wasn't picked up in AMI? Or I was confused.
I was supposed to chunk part of the AMI means enough to see if the chunk of channel sweet part works well enough.
Mm-hmm.
Or not. If not, then we have to use some kind of synthesized learning or bootstrapping to use chunking.
And you haven't done it yet?
No, because I was a bit worried about this kind of this construction.
That's fine. So that's still on the agenda to do.
Yeah, but we should make sure we finish that off, because otherwise that works just wasted, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to use chunks for something useful. Yeah, chunks
well,
are going to be
so,
main
I mean,
entities, if nothing else.
Right. Or building blocks. I mean, we have to think about how chunking interacts with the automatic segmentation, you know, because Barbara
automatic segmentation at which level?
The low level.
Dialogue, yeah.
And I mean, it seems to me that chunking should have some kind of. So if your dialogue app segmenter says there's a segment here, but your chunker said no, this is a coherent chunk.
Yeah,
then
that's a problem.
You know, I mean, maybe they can work together to do a better job. Then
certainly, if you've got chunks, it ought to help you know where your dialogue app boundaries better not be.
Right.
Yeah. And it may be even more mechanical than that, based on the examples we've seen from DFKI. Because they're hand-marking stuff, and the dialogue app boundaries are supposed to be intentional. But they seem to always be marking with that after
there
verbs.
Oh,
you know, with quotes.
Right.
It looks quite mechanical, so we're querying them about this, but that's not really they're supposed to be doing it.
So it sounds like
well, hold on. But when do we need chunking by? And it, you know, so I don't like the idea that you know you start something and then 18 months later you pick up to do the last 10% of the work to finish it off or whatever. So I like things kind of tidy, right? So
how much
work is there left, and when do we actually need it by? Would be useful to discuss.
Well, you wanted to do the chunking on the AMI data, right?
The AMI data is there. There's obviously data is transcribed, I think, or in the final form. We can check the two possible options for doing this on the AMI data. You could either essentially go the same route if they did with the switchboard, you know, do the pantry bank and then create the chunks off that,
mm-hmm.
or you could chunk directly. And it wasn't clear to us which one of those two methods was the right way to do this. Similar enough that the same method could apply, that we derive chunks off the HPSG. I think you might lose a lot in, you know, the step. So basically, your chunker is trained out something that was derived off pen tree bank,
mm-hmm.
and it might be different enough that that actually causes it not to match. You know, if you're suddenly evaluating against chunks that were done using HPSG.
Yeah.
I don't know about grammar, but
yeah,
you know.
Look at some of those videos to see.
They're using the ERG, right? Which probably is maybe finer, which I mean has finer grain distinctions
mm-hmm.
and different levels.
And the mappings
are,
can be pretty difficult for this, right? Or is it easy to map between finer grain distinctions?
It's probably easy to dumb down the HPSG. Because the pen tree bank parses are pretty minimal because they didn't want to commit to a specific grammatical theory. So, I mean, it probably is worth looking at because they're doing this with dampening integer, right? Which is the same parser as the redwoods tree bank was made with that Alex talked about yesterday. So you can look at redwoods parses. See how different they are from tree bank parses. And you might want to talk to Alex to find out if somebody's already done this, turn redwood stuff into tree bank stuff so that they can compare against results that are reported on tree bank.
The names would suggest that this was the idea, right?
Well, that was the idea, I believe.
Yeah. So that sort of assumes that we think it's better to do this by deriving chunks from some parse format than just hand chunking the stuff.
Well, the good thing about that is that then you know that when you go through and parse, you'll be getting the same chunks as when you do this process automatically. Because the problem with when you go through and hand do it is then suddenly you introduce your automatic method and your accuracy goes can go way down. Sometimes it doesn't. If speech tagging, you know, whether you do it by hand or machine, it's pretty much the same accuracy, right? But
so let's try it this way, and then that puts off the question of when do we have to do this to when we get HPSG stuff, right? So can you ask DFKI whether they can give us a couple AMI meetings run through their HPSG process?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what time scale they have in mind. I mean, is this something they were doing it at the moment, but I don't know whether it's just very preliminary. Do you remember?
We talked about it at the meeting that we went to in
Ask them, right?
Well, that's what Alex talked about yesterday, right? The parse, I mean,
FAI how much data and when, right?
You know, I mean, the typical thing is to do mean one out cross validation, you know.
Yeah, I know.
89 dialogues, okay, so I train on 88. Or I train on 1,999. Okay, but
We don't have any particular time in mind when we need a chunker that works on this stuff, so.
Well, the question is, what is chunking going to help? I mean, I think chunking could help automatic dialogue map segmentation. I think chunking could help, as you mentioned, named entity recognition.
Look, if we did a chunked version of the AMI data and stuck it in the CDS under the automatic contributions,
mm-hmm.
then people would end up using it, because they do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, at what stage should we put that in?
Well, we want to make sure we're pretty happy that it's reliable.
Yeah, so post-evaluation, so we can put in some idea of what the evaluation is like.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, you get these very bizarre results because the data is not So, but nobody has expressed like massive interest in chunking. So I think you know nobody's
relying on it this summer.
But I think we should talk to Barbara about how to do some joint experiments, or if she's going to be sending other people, maybe Liz or whoever comes over next time. And it would actually be great if it was Liz, because I think she is the one who did the dialogue app segmentation.
So when do you think that would be?
She just said that hopefully by the next
one.
Meeting
mm-hmm.
she would be bringing someone else, or someone else would be coming instead of her.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a pretty tight time scale then, right? Because it'd be for the fall we'd want to know the evaluation. Is that the time scale you're thinking of?
Not to have it done, but just to talk about how it could interact
done.
With automatic dialogue app
yeah.
segmentation. And I guess we should talk to Yoshi about it in relationship to named entities. Who's doing named entities besides Yoshi?
Vessel, I think.
Okay. So we could talk to Vessel about that as well.
Mm-hmm. I think you should still ask Barbara again, you know, can you have another think about who might have the chunking stuff? Because she has said several times there must be somebody and she can help with that. And I think she's just forgotten. So.
And then
we can evaluate on the EDC, you know, pretty easily.
So one thing that would be very helpful for me is I haven't read. I think we're in a situation where Jean, you know, has read a lot of literature and I've read a lot of literature. And I mean, there is some overlap, but there's also quite a big space where we don't know the literature from the other side. And since you're going to be reading it, I mean, it would probably be useful if you made some kind of, you know, report that described, you know, okay, this is what these people, you know, this is, you know, a synthesis. Okay, here's the basic idea behind exchange structure. And, you know, here's a couple of, you know, here's the two most relevant works that I've read or something like that. You know,
yeah, even if it's just, you know, on a wiki, the references and then why they're relevant, right? I mean, you don't want to
or even just like
idea.
A paragraph of
yeah,
a know,
paragraph
basic
each.
Idea, just
yeah.
because, you know, obviously I'm not going to go read all this kind of stuff because I don't have the time. You probably haven't talked to me about this collaborative.
But that would help us be a lot more specific than just, you know, wisdom bullet points on slides, because then we'd know sort of which literature you're thinking of.
Yeah,
we could
yeah.
be the most important.
Well, and anyway,
stuff.
Every time you write a paper, you've got to go back.
I can have these
really
things anyway. Yeah.
Anyway, so it just makes it a lot easier to get that
mm-hmm.
common ground. I think. You know.
Yeah.
I think it's a real advantage that we read different things and come at it from a different side, because I think the previous approaches haven't really,
mm-hmm.
you know,
they haven't addressed
taken,
this problem. Yeah.
You know. From you know both sides and try to put them together.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go very soon because I've got this hearing to go to. But
I can
so the practical actions. You know, what are the things we're going to go away and do?
Well, I think we both want to send. Well, I don't know. Maybe you've already done this, but you know, I will send you what we can you know chat offline for a minute about the list of things that I think you really need to take a look at and Jean.
Yeah. Right now, I'm trying to do the meeting action segmentation, because after talking to Jean, we have different ideas whether meeting action will be about the same size as topic segments. So it would be good to right now I'm doing this. I'm looking at the data and trying to see if I can do the meeting action segmentation first on the scheme and then do topic segmentation again to see if the boundary actually coincide with each other. Yeah, if that do, then maybe we can talk again whether it makes sense. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. I have just started, and so far, I think it's still about the same level of segmentation we are talking here. But maybe the boundary will not be exactly the same, but the segment. Mm-hmm. Right. Sure.
So you want to go through basically the user requirements and, you know, maybe think about some of the requirements if you want to make a case for, you know, these are the kinds of things that we want, and look, you're going to need this kind of dialogue or argument structure for it.
So should we expect that all the slides from like the work packages, meaning the joint work package, will be up on one of the work package websites? And if not, how do we make that happen?
I'll think about that. So we're going to go through the requirements like that. And did you think that it was reasonable to, after that, to try and actually, you know, take some theory that seems fairly reasonable when you think about.
I do, is once he's read a couple more.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's a few references missing.
Collaborative problem solving world, which I really think we need to take into account. I mean, you may take it into account and say, no, you're wrong, and here's why, but I found the needs of convincing.
Yeah. So then try for another schema. Well,
for or two, and see this one gives you this and this one, and can, you know, are they fundamentally incompatible or can they?
But try it informally.
Yeah.
Yep, When do we get together again? Because I really do have to go.
Okay.
I promised these guys I'd be there.
I think this is going to take about 3 weeks because he's got plenty of reading to do.
Uh-huh.
So maybe we get together
again. Reading lists before that, though, so.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'll send him the references.
So we'll get together in about 3 weeks.
Is that enough time for you, do you think? Is that enough time for you to read and think about? If it's too tight, you know,
oh,
you
yeah.
Say four. So we should get together probably in about 4 weeks.
Yes.
So when are you going to bring this beautiful baby in to see everybody?
I want to see.
Good.
Right. I'm going to head off.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Floods are more important than dialogue structure. I'm afraid I have to
take.
I want to photocopy this, my notes, because of course I need them. So, yeah, you don't mind asking her if I can get a phone call.
No.
So let's say we can just leave it off and take it off?
I don't know. So I'm going to leave it here for now. Oh.
I think she said it.
She said you can take them away because they've
yeah.
all been recorded.
Yeah.
And see you.
I thought she photocopied them before.
Okay, we'll check with her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Shall we? Oh, thanks a lot, Jean.
Thanks.
I always like that lot of structure. I haven't done a lot of dialogue structure stuff in a long time. Never mind.
So where can I find her to tell her that?
She's
in the
phone and it is not plugged in. We were trying to call up here to tell you that I was going to be a few minutes late because I was on the phone with Ivana trying to organize the Viva for Monday. And so I said, call the instrumented meeting room, and do they have a phone number? And David said, yes. And then he said, but I don't think there's a phone connected to it.
I have just run down my battery for 2 hours accidentally.
Why not?
This is not.
Yeah. Do you have a backup?
They better
battery?
Have electricity.
Okay.
It's
done.
Can I take it now, Marcy?
Yeah, you can take it now. You don't check to see how good the pens are recording stuff.
Well, I mean, most narrative.
My note and OK box, right?
Otherwise, we end up with kind of writing on top, right?
It's a little too warm here, yeah.
A little too warm.
Yeah, we already told him.